Happy Thursday, Space Cadets, and welcome back to Pathfinder, a podcast powered by Payload. Today's episode is a special one, covering all things Earth observation, space, pigs, and wake surfing, with a little bit of hybrid rocket engines and 3D printed rocket fuel thrown in for good measure. Today, we will be bringing you a live podcast from South by Southwest that was recorded this Tuesday at the SkyFi Summit. In just a moment, you will hear the conversation, which does not have video, it's just audio, but that's quite all right. On stage and speaking alongside me, or sometimes at me, are Luke Fisher, the CEO of SkyFi, Gabe Dominocello, the co-founder and chief strategy officer of Umbra, Katie Betts, head of BD, or business development, at Albedo, and Will Edwards, the CEO of Firehawk Aerospace. Now, dear space cadets, bear in mind that this is a new format for us, having four guests on at once and whatnot, but the conversation that follows is funny, fast-moving, and definitely worth your time. Before we dive in, I also want to quickly add that I will be in Cambridge tomorrow for the New Space Age Conference in MIT, hosted by the MIT Sloan Space Industry Club. Drop me a line if you'll be there and you'd like to meet up, and you can truly see that I have a face for podcasting. And now, a quick word from today's sponsor, and we will get right along to the main event. Today's episode is brought to you by Kepler Communications, a company bringing the internet to space. Kepler is developing the infrastructure to support out-of-this-world communications by creating solutions that allow operators to access data in real time. The Kepler network will keep customers connected to on-orbit assets through optical inter-satellite links, which significantly increase capacity for mission-essential data downlinking to Earth. Kepler's services will expand your mission potential, all while solving current and future gaps in global space communications. To learn more about Kepler and how they are modernizing space communications, visit kepler.space. Again, that's kepler.space.
Good afternoon, everybody. Good afternoon, Austin, South by SkyFi Summit attendees, and 12 or so hours from now, listeners of the Pathfinder podcast. My name is Ryan Duffy, and I'm the managing editor of Payload and the host of our Pathfinder podcast. And this is a first for us, but it's an exciting format. I think there's going to be plenty of hot takes, great conversation on EO and the future of the industry and more. But before we dive into that, why don't we get an intro from everyone, and we will start with Will, and just say your name of your company, and then we'll get into the problems that you're tackling and the markets you're serving.
Cool. My name is Will Edwards. I'm the CEO of Firehawk Aerospace.
Awesome. My name is Katie Betts, and I am the head of business development at Albedo.
My name is Gabe Dominocello. I'm the co-founder and president of Umbra.
Luke Fisher, the co-founder and CEO of SkyFi.
Fantastic. We'll go back through, and everyone will get a chance to talk their book and describe, you know, the problem that you are solving. But first, I want to turn it over to Will. Start with Will, because he brought a prop, and he also has a video, a quick video that he would like to play. So,
yeah. So I'm a bit of an outlier on this panel. I'm building rocket engines. The rest are Earth observation, obviously, but it's SkyFi, so I was excited to be on this. So what we're doing at Firehawk is we're building hybrid rocket engines powered by 3D printed rocket fuel. So I actually brought about 550 pounds of thrust of 3D printed rocket fuel right here. If you guys want to touch it afterwards, you're feel free to hold it. But we are building rocket engines in Dallas and testing them in Midland, Texas. So last week, or 2 weeks ago, we actually burned 1,000 pounds of thrust. So you can see that this Lego plastic actually does work, full duration test. And we were doing this at our test site in Midland, Texas. Texas has been amazing to us. We've been able to build up our facilities in 45 days and get to a frequency where we're testing these 3D printed hybrid rocket engines powered by 3D printed hybrid rocket fuel on a weekly basis.
It's amazing.
All right, Katie, why don't you tell us a little bit more about Albedo?
Awesome. So Albedo, we are a startup. We are building a constellation of imaging satellites that will collect 10 centimeter resolution optical imagery with 2 meter thermal resolution long wave infrared imagery co-collected. We are super excited to bring this resolution to the commercial market. We were the first company to receive the approval from the U.S. government to do so. And our constellation will be about 24 satellites orbiting at mid-inclination. So really focusing on areas where humans live, majority of the population. And we are industry agnostic. We are not focusing on analytics. We want to be the best data provider we can be and provide the best pixels possible. So we will be providing the highest resolution satellite imagery to the commercial market in 2025.
Gabe, Umbra's been making a lot of waves recently and making a lot of news, releasing its first radar images. So just give us the 30-second to 45-second, if you want to stretch a little bit, elevator pitch for Umbra.
Well, I think it's because we haven't really said much publicly ever. This is the first time I've been on a podcast. We like to keep people in a suspended state of terror as to what we're going to do. But it's like we literally released the highest resolution radar imagery, a gigantic deal with Maxar, which is a big company in our space, and then dropped the price of radar imagery by 90% without telling anyone. So we really are fundamentally a technology company. We're a technology company that's focused on customers. We're highly customer focused. So we're a customer focused company that happens to have satellites. And we just want to build really great technology and bring a lot of value to our customers, which means permissive licensing, working with great companies like SkyFi and giving them access to our data. And we want to see our customers make a lot of money.
Great, great. Luke, let's finish with you. I think most people in the audience here will be familiar with SkyFi, what you're doing, but because we also will probably have, you know, 1,000 or so extra people listening to this tomorrow and throughout the next week, let's hear the quick spiel for SkyFi.
SkyFi is an Earth observation marketplace. So our mission is to easeify the access. Everything Gabe talked about with SAR, Katie with Albedo, 10 centimeter resolution imagery, we want to get it out to the masses. You know, and a big focus of us, like Gabe and like all the companies up here, is the user experience. We have this beautifully designed web and mobile app that allows people to come onto the platform, couple button presses, get satellite imagery. And some of the things we just mentioned up here, you know, with Gabe, you know, dropping the price of SAR, Katie, 10 centimeter resolution, Will with the Firehawk engines, 3D printed stuff, we're all just kind of like, yeah, it's a big deal. That's a big freaking deal, what we're talking about. Buying SAR images on a phone, 3D printed rockets, 10 centimeter resolution, and we want to get it out to the masses. So that's what we're doing at SkyFi.
I wanted to initially kind of kick things off by hearing the optimistic or the most bullish view on the future of Earth observation, but I think I'm actually going to switch it around, and we can talk a little bit more about that later in the back half of the show. But I want to start kind of and ask provocatively, what about the status quo and EO, and why some think that it sucks? To be frank, you know, we could probably spend the entire hour on this, but for those who might not be familiar, let's just sort of baseline with pain points, whether it's like the tasking process, the sales process, the cost. Gabe, you somewhat alluded to that. So anyone can start, but maybe actually, Luke, let's go with
I'll jump in. I think a large part of the problem, it's not necessarily a problem, it's just a natural evolution of technology. Like technology that comes out of the defense world, you know, is built for that purpose. You know, if you look at GPS technology, you know, as a prime example, if 30 years ago I stood up with an investors and said, hey, there's this amazing technology called GPS. Everyone in the future is going to have 2 to 3 GPS devices on their body at all times. I would have gotten laughed out of the room. And yet here we are today. So this GPS that was designed for missile guidance systems naturally finds its way into the commercial world. You know, with the satellite world and Earth observation data world, largely at general, we're seeing that same thing. It was designed for government use. So these big satellite companies and small satellite companies, they model their sales cycle after the government acquisition cycle because that's their largest customer. So naturally, culturally, those teams have been built not to serve, you know, millions of customers like what SkyFi and the rest of this group up here is doing. You know, it's very big, very well-paying customers in the, you know, very low numbers. So, you know, we are taking that right now and trying to change that, but that's the pain point. So we're at this inflection point where more innovation in space, costs are going lower. You need somebody to look at the customer base and go, what do they want? Everyone today has a mobile phone on them. Everyone today has a computer. So you have to design for that aspect. And, you know, part of the problem now is, you know, we're still doing custom quotes, you know, emails back and forth, telephone calls to get imagery and data when I can buy a house online, I can buy a car online, I can get food delivered to my door, yet I can't get an image on my phone until SkyFi and some others. But, you know, so that's this natural evolution of where we're going. That's where I think the large part of the pain points are.
Okay. It is not that EO sucks. Here's a hot take. The technology sucks. Like, that is the problem. The problem is the technology is not interesting, does not have great unit economics. Oh my God, I said it. Unit economics.
Here we go.
Okay. So if you, an optical satellite looks directly down, sometimes looks off nadir, theirs does. Your field of regard, so I'm not saying anything bad. Your field of regard is somewhat small. So if you're flying over a place like Texas, you're maybe on a daily basis getting one or two images. If you only have, if let's say there's a big war that breaks out in Texas and you need to get as many pictures as you can over Texas, you're only getting a image, two or three images per day. That sucks. That means you have to be an asshole. It means you have to go to the biggest customer, which is the government. And you have to say, okay, rather than getting selling this image for $500 or $1,000, which is what we sell for, we need to sell this image for $12,000, $15,000, $40,000. So what we invented is an ability to take more pictures over a high demand area. And no one else did that. Like, we're sitting here, you're not in space yet. So until people can go and create value for their customers, which is an abundance of supply. So if you have a lot of data, you don't have to be an asshole to your customer. And you can say, hey, what if I'll sell everybody imagery at a flat price with a easy license and a simple UX, and I'm not gonna have a used car salesman sell you the data. Mm-hmm. And that enables Luke's great company.
Yep. Great. Katie, thoughts?
Yep. I will piggyback off of much of what Gabe just said. We are not in orbit yet, but we hope to mimic much of what Umbra is doing from a licensing and a pricing perspective, being transparent, flexible, easy, and make it easy for the end user, subject matter experts all over the world to task our satellite either on demand or in a recurring manner based on what their use case is. And there are a lot of hard problems that need to be solved and that exist and that have been, you know, so many amazing data sets within EO and other modalities exist today and are being applied to these use cases and applications. But it feels like the frequency at which the end user is able to access these data sets and at the price point and the ease of use is not feasible to actually problem solve. And so we at Albedo are very excited, just as Umbra is, to enable accessibility through an easy to use API, an easy to use web platform. And I think overall, like Gabe likes to preach, unit economics is very important, especially to an industry leader or an analytics provider that is providing insights to an industry leader, where they need to be able to forecast their spend and be able to project their costs and understand how much it will cost their business to train a model to derive insights and provide value to either their internal teams or to their customer. And so we are excited, like Umbra, to provide high revisit and to provide images that are much smaller than the industry standard today today, optical imagery, at least, there's a minimum of about 25 square kilometers. And we are going to provide images that are much smaller, up to or as little as 1 kilometer diameter circles to 1 by 4 kilometer, 2 by 4 kilometer. And so we're able to collect many more images per region, like Texas, for example, than other providers that are in any given pass may be able to collect one. And that is very beneficial when you're training models or looking at looking for objects or looking for change detection. And yeah.
And you're talking tasking, right?
Yes, correct. Tasking. Yes. Yep.
Thanks, Katie. Well, I will not put you through the ringer and make you speak to the pain points in Earth observation, but why don't you just give an overview into some of the issues or improvements that can be made in rocket propulsion?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good call. Anything of substance I have to say on EO is because I'm friends with Katie, Gabe, and Luke, so you guys can hear it from them. Rocket engines are expensive, they're dangerous, and they fail a lot. And they prevent a frequent launch cadence, at least the amount that we want. Look at all the times that we decide to stall a demonstration launch or just stall a launch period because the temperatures of the fuels are not appropriate. That's a big problem. It's a problem that's really being solved by SpaceX and a few others, but I guess this isn't my industry to really talk about. Firehawk is really focused first on aerospace and defense. So I wanted to go after a mature market. So not saying that commercial LEO isn't mature, but for propulsion systems, NDAA was an $800 billion budget this year. So it just made sense for us to really partner with companies like Raytheon. And a little bit of a ramble, but rocket engines are just expensive. They're a little bit dangerous. And if you 3D print rocket fuel, you can make it in a matter of hours and not 2 months. So that's it. I thought I was going to answer something on Earth observation right there. So I'm sorry.
No. Like I said, I didn't want to put you through the ringer, and I wanted to give you a chance to share more about what you're building. I think that's a pretty good, this is a pretty good segue into what will first be a question that I'm teeing up for Gabe, but that everyone on this panel should be able to speak to. And that's just the concept of chips on your shoulder and proving the haters wrong. You know, like space is famously hard. Hardware is hard, which most of you are in hardware, obviously. UX is hard, and being customer first is hard. Gabe, I've heard you say that when you got started, you were told by the smartest people in the room is a direct quote, that starting Umbra, let alone getting to any of the milestones that you have hit so far, it was impossible. So I'll start with you and just ask why they were wrong. And then I think that question would apply perfectly to all not just Umbra, but all three other startups that are on this panel.
So specifically to very smart people tend to pattern match. And that can go from an investor to an engineer or whatever. So if you're pattern matching or you're reading a book, it's like this book says X, Y, and Z. You are doing the exact opposite. It's not going to work. And especially with investors, and we all know this, that they're very well known for, well, I don't say anything bad about investors, but for pattern matching, rather than often going back to first principles. But I would argue that, you know, in the early days, it was very difficult to find money. And I think that was our best strategic advantage. Because if we had gone out, so David and I, and it isn't well known, we bootstrapped the company for like years. And if you ever have to bootstrap a satellite company, I would not recommend it. It's very expensive. It'll take all of your money, which is fine. And it helped us learn it. It helped us make a lot of mistakes. And that kind of pain allowed us to make decisions where we could control spending. where a lot of startups will like go and get a bazillion dollars and say money's free, it's going to grow on trees. Well, rather than like, I don't know, having one satellite that takes 50 images over Texas on a daily basis, I'll just launch 50 satellites, which is a massive amount of CapEx. It's a massive amount of depreciation and your unit economics suck. Oh my God, I said unit economics again. So I think that that strategic advantage just allows us to make money. And so now with, you know, interest rates changing, the economy changing, everyone's looking at us like, oh, these geniuses who just like built a company that makes money when, if you see all the space stocks, like they're not doing great. And it's because there is no spending discipline whatsoever.
I'll take on, you know, the proving the haters wrong or the smartest people, you know, as it relates to, you know, the consumer market for Earth observation data and imagery. You know, when Bill and I met and Mark and the rest of the team here, a lot of the theme we heard is like, there's no consumer market, it's defense only. And when I say consumer, like talking individuals, but small businesses and folks that just haven't been tested. You know, so the thought was no consumer market. And I go, Of course, there's no consumer market. If you're saying it's been tested, but the only way a consumer can buy imagery is $15,000 at a pop, signing years-long contracts, of course it doesn't exist. That would be like, you know, Uber's business model going, hey, of course you can take an Uber, but you have to sign a $100,000 contract. And you have to take a semi for every trip. You're like, I don't need a semi. I want to spend $20 to go to A to B. Well, that's what historically the market's been like. So now, you know, there's this focus and again on, you know, unit economics, smaller scene sizes, more innovation in space. Now we're seeing it. I mean, in a handful of weeks that we've launched, I think our last count was 12,000 plus individual accounts at SkyFi going, okay, so whoever said there's no consumer market, you just, you know, went into the bias that like Gabe was talking about. And like, it's like VC diligence, kind of like, well, surely somebody else tested it. So they just keep repeating the same line. So that's what we're here to break down. You just have to block out the noise and go, cool, we're going to try it and actually prove it through data. And that's what we're doing.
And I can touch on this from another perspective. So when we got started, everyone thought we wanted to build a spaceship. All I want to do is build rocket engines. And these rocket engines work for space and defense. So hardware was a problem. People were already investing in all the launch companies. So they thought we don't need another launch company. Then they said, you'll never be able to partner with the United States. You'll never get a good commercial prime. They'll eat you alive and you won't get any revenue. It'll take forever. Well, we partnered with Raytheon Missiles and Defense. And then just to be frank, VCs didn't want to touch defense. All of their LPs were either against it. It didn't match their thesis. And this was back in 2019. Now there's a huge shift. Yeah. So we were able to partner. We got plenty of issued patents on our technology. It works. We have revenue and we're seeing VCs transition over to wanting to invest in aerospace and defense now. And it's just a good timing for us. We were patient and did the work without the money, kind of like Umbra.
And I think Albedo has a pretty cool story in terms of proving people wrong or proving the market wrong. Our CEO, co-founder CEO, Topher Haddad, was working for Lockheed Martin 2019 when President Trump at the time tweeted a photo of a picture from a classified spy satellite. I don't know if any of you remember that. I believe it was an Iranian missile site. And that was the first time a president ever tweeted a classified photo.
That was bad.
That was not great. So, you know, Topher working for Lockheed Martin at the time, building optical satellite imaging systems for US government customers, took note of this, like, okay, this is interesting that this was tweeted out. A couple months later, he listened to a recording of a panel discussion at World Satellite Business Week of business leaders from Earth observation companies. And they were asked the question, okay, if that level of resolution that was, you know, exposed in the photo that President Trump tweeted was available to the commercial market, would that be valuable? How would that impact problem solving, and how would that drive the Earth observation economy and business in general? And their response was, well, it's not possible at all. And for two reasons. One would be way
said the same thing to us.
Would be way too expensive to build a system that could collect that resolution of imagery. Would require a satellite the size of Hubble and would cost $1 billion. It would not be economically feasible. It would not be profitable. So there's that. Two, from a regulations perspective, the U.S. government will not approve the commercial market to sell that resolution commercially. It is for government use only at this time. So all valid. Then a few months later, we roll into 2020. COVID hits. Topher Haddad, our CEO, can no longer go into his skiff. He cannot work on anything. He's at home twiddling his thumbs. He's an entrepreneur at, you know, deep down at heart. And he's like, okay, let me start doing the math here. Let me build an architecture, a system design. And, you know, I wonder if we fly lower, if we change the mass, use electric propulsion, remove some requirements that certain government customers just want for whatever certain reasons. I think this could work from an architecture perspective and be economically, you know, orders of magnitude less expensive. He asked his mentor to vet his satellite design, his architecture, and basically prove him wrong. Say, you know, Topher, just tell me I'm wrong. And this gentleman came back, his mentor, and said, you're absolutely right. This is totally possible. This design is absolutely feasible and would cost so much less, is economically feasible. And then a couple months later, NOAA, or the U.S. government, changed the way they approve licensing, and the restriction of 25 centimeters being the highest resolution that would be available to the commercial market, that was changing. They were open to it being lower. And that's when Topher decided to leave Lockheed and start a company, build Albedo. So I think we are an amazing example of pushing back and trying to, you know, prove everyone and everything wrong.
It was our license. So, yeah, we got the Topher read the article about our license.
Yes, correct.
Which was,
yep, 100%.
You know, we were told, like, every VC, every diligence, like, this is illegal. You cannot do that. And we're like, well, it's illegal right now. We'll see. And we are pushing the limits of the regulators, especially in our new system, which is absolutely terrifying.
Time for another word from our sponsor, Kepler Communications. Space operators face many downlinking roadblocks today, and they rely on decades-old technology to access critical data. Kepler is solving the downlink bottleneck by providing real-time access to satellite data, optimized latency, and high-speed downlink capabilities. The company's hybrid network will modernize on-orbit communications with a combination of optical technology, S-band inter-satellite links, and a high-speed backhaul link to move data more efficiently back to Earth. Kepler offers a full stack of solutions with payload technology, spectrum licenses, ground infrastructure, and a satellite constellation with full orbital coverage to satisfy the entire communications requirements of your mission. Check out kepler.space for more information. Again, that's kepler.space.
So y'all are partnering with other companies, which we've already hit on and alluded to already. And in some cases, you're partnering with one another. I think that a common word that you see tossed, that I at least see tossed around a lot in for space companies as an aspirational goal or a reality of their kind of operating MO is vertical integration. And in a lot of cases, that is a desirable end state. I think that you've already made it clear that, you know, you think about partnering and working with others to not necessarily have to do every single thing yourself, from like in SkyFi's place, you know, like not flying your own hardware, to other examples. How do you decide who like who you're going to partner with, when you're going to partner, and like what to build versus either not focus on or ignore. Gabe also, like, you know, analytics. We'll hand it over to y'all, and we'll start with Luke.
Yeah, and the partnership approach, I mean, SkyFi exists because of our partners. You know, we made a very, you know, upfront statement that we're going to partner with the best and let the customers decide. We're crowdsourcing it. And, you know, I think we've seen examples and are seeing examples. I won't name the companies, but those that have tried to completely vertically integrate, operate satellites, build their own analytics. You can never hire enough people to build all the analytics to solve all the customer pain points. You're just going to run out of money. And we're seeing that live happen. So we want to partner with the best. And it's down to core competencies. You know, we are not an Earth observation, geospatially, you know, robust company. We are software engineers, technologists, entrepreneurs, you know, most of my team, myself, my CTO, my head of product, handful of our engineers are all coming from Uber, where we built products for millions of people. So that's the mindset. So the core competency of that. And, you know, I think about, you know, our partnership approach, like, this may sound a little weird, but, you know, I think of Umbra, Albedo, you know, Satellogic, you know, all the analytic companies, Impact Observatory, as the movie studios of the world, and we're Netflix. You know, it's a diversity of choice for us. And that's our theme. That's what we're good at. And that's what we're building. And let the, you know, the literal rocket scientists figure out how to put stuff in space, and we'll sell it. So yeah, diversified partner approach.
Well, it also doesn't work. Yeah. I mean, we haven't ever seen a company where it's vertically integrating and they're making lots and lots of money. It does not work. And the reason why it does not work is you have somebody who's really good at one part of the value chain, and their VC, who made all of their money from B2B SaaS, goes, well, you need to do all of it so you can capture all the money. And when you try and be everything to everyone, you wind up being really bad to everyone. And it puts you into an extremely competitive state with all of your customers. So if you have, I don't know, some analytics product, and your provider is competing with you on that analytics product, are you going to want to buy their data? Like, no, it doesn't work. And if you have like a VC on your board that's going, well, I know you're really good at building satellites, but you really have to do machine learning, AI, big data, because my LPs love that, and it's like so hot right now, then you're going to go out and you're going to quadruple your burn. Like, quadruple. Like, it's not like, oh, you're going to go from doing one thing that's really expensive, which is like buying rocket launches and building complex hardware. And then you're going to go and have to compete with Google on hiring a machine learning engineer. And then you're going to have to go and try and figure out how to distribute it. It is not something that can scale with venture dollars. And I heard something the other day, like literally yesterday, from, I won't say who, a well-known prominent investor was on a panel yesterday, that was saying the dumbest, like, I mean, like, just totally clueless nonsense about the market, where it's like they were comparing the Earth observation market to an appliance that was like, where it's like $4 billion. I'm like, no. Like, if you need to buy, like, there are single boxes. Oh, I should be really careful. There's the amount of money that is spent on Earth observation is in the tens, if not hundreds of billions of dollars. The thing is, that market is inside the government. So what you need to do is you need to innovate. And if you can think up an idea in a dorm room, the government has better, and it's, you know, they can do amazing things. Whereas like Topher had really good insight because he worked at Lockheed Martin, and like my co-founder had really good insight into the architecture. So you have to build something that is either completely different or way better. Because think of it from a government analyst. If you task a satellite and you're like, oh, I need this picture, you task a satellite and then you get a picture. You don't pay for that image. It comes from the architecture. So in order to go and buy something, you can't say, oh, I'm going to buy something that is worse and I'm going to have to find budget to pay for it. It's just, competing with free is not possible. You have to innovate. And I'm not seeing a ton of innovation in this market. And then everyone goes out and complains and like, the government won't buy our stuff. And it's like, well, the government had that in 1994. Like, why would they buy that?
Yeah, I would say I feel really thankful. I mean, truly, and blessed every single day. I think I have one of the coolest jobs. I get to talk with people all over the world that are working on the coolest things and are so stoked when they hear that they will have access to such high resolution data and quality data. And they, I've had one gentleman fall out of his chair. I've had a gentleman take a call from the emergency room. His son was sick. Like, they are just so stoked and excited. And we, our entire team tries our best every single day to shepherd the opportunity we have in front of us as well as we can, and to make the right decisions every day to make this data as accessible as possible. And I think going back to your question, Ryan, and if you don't mind, can you repeat exactly what it is so that I can answer on point, because we've gone down a
regarding like a vertical integration.
Yes. Okay. So exactly. There's no conflict of interest with any customer that I speak with there. I only get to enable them. I only get to bring good news and excite them, because we are not trying to do what they're doing or pretend like we're subject matter experts or that we can do what they have been doing and are trying to do better than they can. And we just want to enable them. And I think there's an aspect of being vertically integrated from a hardware perspective that is important to a satellite builder and operator, to have control over the hardware aspects and timelines and schedules, to be able to launch when we want and iterate when we want, etc. But from a software and like value chain perspective, we are not aiming to take over any part of what our customers are doing right now in bringing value to their specific geographical market or domain.
Well, again, I'm not going to ask you about vertical integration and Earth observation, but but this question does still stand. You know, for propulsion, you're not trying to build the entire vehicle or rocket. So,
yeah,
sure, you have thoughts here.
The United States is in an interesting position now, because we really only have one scaled engine provider to the government, to our military, Aerojet Rocketdyne. Now they're probably going to get acquired by L3Harris. So it's really important. In a company like mine, you know, we were not going to be able to grow into a large organization like an Aerojet without getting a partnership. So I really made an emphasis on going out and partnering with the right company. We chose Raytheon Missile and Defense. I guess fortunately they chose us too. And they're the largest aerospace company in the world right now. So they have amazing resources. They've been incredible partners to us. And we also have the freedom to work with everyone else in the industry. But Aerojet made a multi-billion dollar business by selling engines to pretty much every A&D company in the United States. And Firehawk thinks that we can be a supplement to that. And I think that there are about three other young propulsion companies that are coming up that are going to be able to add to the industry as well. So it's a huge market. I'm a big believer that if you're going to survive starting out as two or three founders, you have to find a way to partner with one of those larger organizations so that you can get cash flow, you can build a team, and then you can legitimize yourself in the eyes of the DOD.
So I want to switch gears a little bit. When a new technology or platform arrives, it's hard to initially imagine or foresee all of the services, products, companies, use cases that could be built on top of it. And the analogy that I always go to is like the iPhone App Store and like the combination of 3G, 4G, and companies like Uber, where you used to work, obviously, Uber Elevate and Snapchat and all those other applications that were built on top of it. I want to pose that question, and with that in mind, that it's like a fool's errand to predict like what exactly is coming down the pike. I do want to pose the question to each of you, and maybe just so that we're not focused on the exact same answer, talk about easy, like ordering a satellite image or a SAR image or hyperspect or something that is literally as easy as using like a Shopify e-commerce store. Like I've done it, I've tried it, it works. And then Gabe, just in light of the Maxar, the Maxar news, like what sorts of, applications or services you see being unlocked with like multimodal, multi-sensor, satellite imagery and satellite data. And then Katie, very, very low flying satellites that have these super high resolution capabilities. And then Will, we'll get you in the next round.
Okay.
So ease of access, what's enabled through ease of access? That's the foundational question. Yeah. You know, for us, you know, SkyFi, I think the future and what's going to be enabled, it's a good analogy. We kind of think of ourselves as the iPhone. Like we are creating this platform where developers, imagery providers, data providers can put their stuff on our iPhone. Customers will choose who's best. So that app store concept for us. In the future, what I think we're really going to do is, it's not about imagery. It's really not. Imagery enables certain stuff, but where we get to through ease of access and data, when you combine the data, imagery, the analytics integration and true integration, it comes down to answering problems throughout the world. That's where I see us going. Like, what is the, you know, San Francisco port max capacity on a Friday? What is Atlanta Airport at on peak demand? You know, asking those questions. That's where I think we get to through the easification. You know, because it's less and less about the actual imagery itself. Like a SAR imagery, a SAR picture, you know, it's a black and white picture, it sees through clouds, it's amazing, but at surface value, you have to ask a lot more of it. You can gain insights from it, but there's a lot more to it. Same thing with 10 centimeter resolution from albedo when they get to space. It's cool to look at, but so what? That gets to a level of curiosity where people like that, but then there's the analytics and the integration, the asking questions. So we're going through that path of getting through that integration, getting through the analytics side of it, and then just providing answers. That's where I think we're going with this easification of everything. So,
yeah. So I'm next, I assume. So it's the answer is like, how is multi-int data, which is multiple forms of intelligence, going to be useful? So Maxar, at the same time they signed our deal with us, they acquired a company called Aurora, which listens to signals. And I think it goes directly to what Luke said. It's no one cares except for the answer. If you talk to an oil trader, and I think we all know one, he's like, I don't care what's in there. I want to know how much oil is in the container, how much oil is in the ship. And if you can use SAR to understand that, you can use optical to understand it better. You can use signal intelligence or all these multiple forms of intelligence to actually get the best, most accurate answer. So I think that when people think about this market, they think space, they think satellites, they think blah, blah, blah. This is an information market. It is at this time, at this place, what is happening there? It's not the satellite market. I want to understand like how many images are being sold, blah, blah, blah. No, no, no. It is how much oil is in the ship. And if you can do that, and we don't do that, none of us do that. If you can do that, you can make a lot of money, which is why the VCs were chasing it so hard. But the problem is that you have to empower your customers, which is like what SkyFi, which is what all of us are doing. But like, I'm very excited. I saw the video for SkyFi where it's like, if you add a layer of tools on data and those tools can give you answers in a affordable way, like that's totally game changing. I mean, we were looking at, we have been posting things on Twitter and somebody just whipped up a tool to count cars in a parking lot. It was like phenomenal. It was like, this is one of your people.
Yeah. Throw it out to the crowd.
Yeah. Just threw it out to the crowd. They came with a really cool tool. They put it on GitHub and now it's available. Like that would never, one, it could never happen because we have the only resolution that can do that. But like it enabling that to the crowd and not competing with everyone and just empowering everyone to like become better and to make money, because money's great, then everyone is going to be successful in this industry. But if we try and cannibalize each other and take each other's markets, it will never work. Do one thing, do it well, and make a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at Albedo, one of our core values, and I know core values were discussed in a previous session earlier this morning, and we take our core values very seriously at Albedo, but one of them is rising tide lifts all boats, and we believe that firmly. We believe that every single player in the Earth observation space needs to be successful in order for us to be successful. We are excited for the day where joint collects are possible in the commercial market and tip and cue is possible in the commercial market. We view ourselves as a complementary data set where, okay, a customer wants to task an RF constellation, then they want to task Umbra, then maybe they think, okay, there's some land deformation. Maybe we should go ahead and task Albedo. Oh, this area is also hot. What's going on? That is extremely, extremely exciting. And that is where we are. Our mission is focused to continue to support and enable the open source community and the creation of standards across this industry so that everyone can be successful and yes, make money, but also raise the quality of life and just standard of living globally across, you know, so many problems.
I want to
save the world and make money.
Yes.
If you like, yes. I mean, how many poor people can help save the world? You have to make money.
Yes.
It is very, very important.
It is.
Like, it is not like, don't buy fast cars or do whatever it is that you want to do. But like, it is very, very difficult to make a lot of money. If you have a way to do it, you should do it. And then you can go improve your community and then you can save the world. But to any entrepreneur, do not start with trying to save the world. That is for interest rates below 3%.
I want to take us to the finish line here. If anyone has any questions that they'd like to ask, this is a call to action. I'll ask in a sec. But the one that I want that someone wanted to ask that SkyFi asked its community for before the week leading up to this was if your product or if your imagery was around when the Malaysian plane, Malaysia Airlines Flight 370 went missing, would you have been able to spot debris in the ocean?
For me,
it's for anybody, any product.
I would definitely say that if I was like, okay, I want to solve this problem, which is like find debris for the Malaysia airliner. The last thing that I would do is start a satellite company. I would buy a dinghy and I would put a sonar on it and then go and find the debris. Satellite data cannot be all things to all people. There are certain applications that are applicable to that. So it'd be very naive to say that like finding, it's too grandiose. It doesn't make any sense. What you need to do is figure out how to provide a lot of value to your customer. And many times it's not your data. Like I often tell people to just go use Sentinel A1 data, go use NASA data. It's free, it's great. Like you don't go and sign some complex contract. Use open sources of intelligence. You can't fit SAR or optical into a different hole. Like if I needed to see through a cloud, I would not use optical.
Mm-hmm. Lesson learned. Don't pigeonhole SAR.
Or anything.
Second to last, or I guess if anyone has a question really quickly, we are pushing up on time. Going once, going twice. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Janaea Griffin. I'm with the Equity Space Alliance. We are bridging the gap between resources and historically excluded communities so that they can get into the space economy. My question is really around supplier diversity. So we know that a lot of the contracts, like you said, are coming from the government. There are areas for subcontracting. What are your companies doing around supplier diversity programs?
Supplier diversity programs. Well, for us, I mean, it's more of a partnership approach for us, you know, in terms of supplier. We'll partner / willing to take a lot of diverse suppliers across the board. And again, it's back to the crowd. Let the crowd choose what's best. That's been our take from day one. I don't know if that answers the question on true. I think it's more for the hardware, subcontracting, who's doing the work. So probably Umbra and Albedo, yeah, you know, for that one.
We build a lot of stuff in-house. That goes back to everyone saying that it's impossible because there wasn't a lot of like stuff for us. We had to like invent it and then build it. But we use a lot of off-the-shelf components. Everything's American-made because America's the best. And we buy parts and we assemble in-house from a diverse supply chain. What you don't want is a war to happen and then suddenly you don't have access to some widget and then you can't launch a satellite to like keep all of us safe.
Yeah, so it's same for us. We build everything in-house. And honestly, we do our best just to source from the United States. ITAR is very scary, so we abide by ITAR. That's our number one rule. And then everything else from there is how can we just most effectively, cost effectively, and time efficiently get our materials and build our product.
Last question. When will satellite imagery be granular or high resolution enough for anyone, or for me to be able to command a satellite, task a satellite to get a image of Bill Perkins wake surfing on Lake Travis that you can see clearly enough that it's him?
Well, I'll take a little different approach. You know, for us on satellite imagery, I don't know when Albedo launches. Hopefully that'll be great. Bill would love that, I'm sure, for the wake surfing side. But you know, we talk a lot about satellite imaging here with SkyFi. That's where we're starting. But we've got drone partners. There's Bobby from PayPixel, I think, in the audience somewhere. We've got stratospheric balloons, airplanes. You know, so it's no one cares if it comes from a satellite or not. They just want the image. That's our whole partner or you know partnership approach for all of this. But I don't know. So I mean, drones could do it now. Put on the platform now, who cares? You got a picture of Bill wake surfing. Love that.
So. Yeah, July 2025 is when we will capture an image of Bill Perkins wake surfing on Lake Austin. His boat will be more visible. He will be more visible than three dots, which I know he mentioned in a prior podcast. As we had to prove to the U.S. government that we can see a pig from space. So I promise you, we will be able to see his boat.
We all heard it. July 25.
Wait, hold on. You can do it right now. Just go to upwardspace.com. I mean, we could tell you that it is Bill's boat, assuming it has an X-band radar, and we could tell you a pixel size about a soda can. You probably radar doesn't work great on like soft things, so nice hard metal things. But if it has a radar signature, we'll find you.
Well, let's we're gonna hold you to that. I want to see that shot in the near term.
Let's
future,
do it. Let's go wake surfing.
This has been a great conversation. Lots to chew on and think about, but we'll have to save that for a part two. Thank everyone. Please join me in thanking our great panelists today.